You're listening to the Reinvest Podcast, where each Tuesday we will show you how to reclaim, reconnect, and refocus your life by bringing you the top real estate professionals in the industry. We'll pull back the curtain so you can implement these tools and tactics to build generational wealth. Your hosts, Garrett Gatton and Seth Simonillo. Hey, Reinvest listeners, thank you for joining us for episode 51 of the Reinvest Podcast. This is the show where we get to show you how to maximize your life, squeeze it for everything that you can through the power of real estate investing. Been a lot in the news here. If you've been following some different articles, bigger pockets, different stuff like that, the big thing everybody is looking towards is that there is over $1 trillion worth of commercial mortgages that are going to reset and balloon here in the next 24 months that people are sweating about.
Things do not look good for office. So if you own like just a bunch of office, I'm going to pray for you. That's right. I hope your loans aren't coming due. I hope you have long-term fixed rate debt. So,
and a lot of people, you know, the pivot they're making right now is multifamily conversions from office space. But just a couple things why I bring that up. There's really two points on that. Three, if you are in an office or even a retail setting where your loans are going to reset, look for a pivot. And there is time still to look for a pivot. People are taking spaces that maybe were leased up. And through COVID, the shrinking of the office footprint, they're looking at getting creative on how to maximize those dead spaces into cash flow for multifamily, different options that way. Number two is look for buying opportunities. I know it kind of sounds crazy, but you make your money in real estate when you buy. And there could be some deals to happen in those spaces for people who can think creatively. And then the third thing that I want to emphasize is the importance of owning cash flow assets.
Yes.
It's easy. I think commercial real estate can be very sexy and, you know, potentially low maintenance. And when you're managing a tenant, that's a business. However, your eggs can be in one basket more so. And having residential, multifamily, some kind of cash flow asset is a huge thing, especially in a downturn, so you can service your debt and your expenses that way. But
that's good stuff. That's good stuff.
So, who we got on?
Yeah, today we have a great guest. We have Curtis May. Curtis, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having
me. You're in Philadelphia area over in PA.
Yes, sir.
And you are the owner and founder of Practical Wealth Solutions. Been doing financial services for over 35 years, and you're a fellow.
I was like
podcaster.
11 when I got started. I was like Doogie Howser, no,
savant, child prodigy, right. Curtis right. May, and host of the Practical Wealth Show. Which, if for people who are watching on YouTube, I got that in the background. So, Curtis, tell us about your company. Give us kind of what you do today. And then let's jump into how you got started at age 11.
Right. So what I do today is, it's funny that you start out with, you know, what you were talking about before about the mortgage and stuff. I consider myself a financial educator that helps people implement. So what I do today is I teach principles-based planning. And we teach principles that help our clients become and remain financially free. Right. Mm-hmm. And so we have five principles and we call the three rules of investing. But what I found is I tend to work with, you know, people that were like, well, I work with, their goal is financial freedom, same as your audience. Right. And so they want work optional income. And then they feel that they can make their portfolio make more money than some fund manager never met on Wall Street. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's who I work with. So what I do is help people lean into that. You know, most people, what if you're an investor, you need liquidity, use of control of capital. Right. So what the main thing I teach is that your financial plan precedes the business and the investment plan. Right. Mm-hmm. What do you want and why? And then so we were talking about before we went on, there's steps being skipped that leave you vulnerable, but you don't see it because you're just chasing returns. You're chasing money. You want to be in the sexy part. I want to, you know, fix and flip, but I want to buy and hold. I want to buy this and that, but you have to play defense. So if I were to boil down to what I am now, I'm the defensive coordinator. Y'all guys are offense.
That's right.
But defense wins championships. So I'm the defensive coordinator.
That's arguable. That was good. No, I think that's good, man, because everybody's got a different entry point into the investment journey, you know, and outside of real estate even. And I think whatever your touch point is, you think that is the whole piece of the pie, right?
Right.
So I got started in real estate as a real estate agent 3.5, almost 4 years ago. And real estate investing, hard assets, buy and hold investing was my entry point, right? And I thought that was everything. And the longer that I've gone, you know, down this road, the more I see these other pieces of that, the spokes to the wheel, so to speak, that really fill out what it is that I'm after. And, you know, you start and you're like, well, I got to buy houses. Well, why? You know, and a lot of these guys, the Tony Robbins, the guys that are kind of zoom out and focus on wealth and what you're talking about, they try and put things kind of in their proper place.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's that. But I think you have to pick the vehicle that you like.
Mm-hmm.
And but I think you got to figure out, well, what is, how do I know if I've won? What is financial freedom look like? And then, you know, what do you want? Because here's the framework that we teach. Principles drive strategy. Strategy drives tactics.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so tactics are, let's say, products that you buy. But there's no, like, I'm in the financial world. There's no financial product in of itself is going to take you to glory. Like a strategy I teach is something called infinite banking. But it still has to go within the context of you know, how does it help? What is it? What's the problem you're solving?
Right.
And what are you trying to do? Where too many people focus on the tactic, like some of an insurance mm-hmm. policy, and people miss the whole thing
yep.
because mm-hmm. they're focused on, you know, the tactical aspect of it and not what they want, how you've won, you know, because there's lots of different ways to do real estate. So, you know, what would you like, multifamily? Do you like single family? Do you want to do turnkey? Do you want to do, you know, notes? I got clients that do notes and, you know, so what do you want to do? Because mm-hmm. one of the things that we teach is, investing is about becoming something, not about buying something, right? Yeah. So it's be, then do, then mm-hmm. have, right? And see, most people, so the financial industry is catered towards people that want to hit the easy button. They don't want to think. They don't want to learn right. anything. They don't want to become right. an mm-hmm. expert. But everybody that's good at something, they practice, they study, they become an expert. They understand what they're doing. They have control over it. So just look at anybody, look at the Forbes 400, look at any successful investor. They want control, okay,
yep.
of the deal, and they know what you're doing because investing is not risky. This is what Kiyosaki would say, and being uneducated is
yeah.
risky.
Yeah. Right? Isn't so, it right? funny? Our brains aren't conditioned to think that way, though, right?
Yeah.
And one of the guys I love listening to is Jocko Willink. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him. He's retired name, Navy SEAL.
Oh, the Navy SEAL.
Yeah. Extreme ownership. That's kind of like
I just
his...
got that book in the mail.
Did you really?
Yesterday. Well, I'm in the Two Comma Club in with and he's speaking at Funnel Hacking Live. So I'm going to that in the nice. Fall. So oh, I'll sweet. We'll see him. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Really? Awesome. Well, dude, he's a hardcore guy. But really the title of his book's worth everything. Extreme ownership. It's what you're talking about. We kind of want to alleviate ourselves of having to know or be responsible for something. We want someone else to do it for us. And guess what? You're going to pay that person to be the expert for you,
yeah.
right? Or you can be the expert. And I think let's distinguish what we're talking about. We're not talking about being all things because you can only do a few things well. People come to you as an expert and say, help me. But I'm talking about somebody taking ownership of their finances, taking ownership of their wealth creation and empowering themselves versus going to somebody and saying, I'm just going to put this away in a 401k and I hope everything's going to shake out in the end. That is not being proactive.
Yeah, listen, I tell people, if that's how you think, don't call me.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's your money. It's not my money, right? And so yeah. I'm the guide. You know, I'm Yoda, right? You're
Luke. Yeah, there you go.
And I'm just letting you know, now you know the Force exists, but you still have to go through the trials to become a Jedi, right? And so I'm your money for life guide, as we call it. And that's the key, because what I teach is, to your point, we call it the three rules of investing. Invest in what you know, or invest in knowing. Okay. Mm-hmm, so you got to invest in what you know, invest in knowing. You want to invest in what you can control or influence the outcome of. And don't chase returns. See, most people are chasing returns because they don't want to take responsibility of their finances. And I think the other point to one of your early points you started out with, we teach that I want people to think from what I call a macroeconomic view. You got to know, because I had a mentor say, look, if you know what's going on, you'll know what to do.
Yeah.
Right. And so, because if you understand, you know, I'm a student because I learned from Nelson Nash, but Austrian economics, you know, in the business cycle theory. So there are reasons why markets go up and down. Mm-hmm. Most of it's surrounded around the Fed. And so if you start to understand what is kind of making these things happen, you'll know how to pivot. You'll see it coming. Yep. You know, and so a lot of people are so myopic. I'm in this thing. One of the things I learned from listening to, what's that show? The Real Estate Guys, and listening to, they always talk about the different, you said we're real estate investors, but they talk about gold and silver. They talk about this and that, because you have to, they're different asset classes, but they all work together, and you just need to be more knowledgeable. So that's what I try to do. And that's kind of what I try to share with people, to, you know, read a book. You got to be, I think you read a book a month. You know, you got to read a book a month on money, right? One on money, one on skills, right? Because skills is what make money. You need to get better. Like in real estate, what's the skill? You need to learn how to negotiate. You got, it is marketing. It's leadership. You got to lead your team, because investing is a team sport, but you got to work on that stuff. You know, how are you good at solving problems? Are you? Mm-hmm. How good? Because money follows value. So you have to learn how to solve problems. You know, entrepreneurs solve problems
and get rewarded for it,
right? You know, and
good
and for a profit, solve problems for a profit, right? And so what you want to be able to do is, the more problems you can solve for your seller or whoever, that is in direct correlation to your income. And so people want more money, but money is a result of creating value in the marketplace. And they focus on the wrong thing. They don't focus on, how can I serve more people?
Yep.
How can I solve more problems for people? They don't know where money comes from.
Right. So this is Curtis today. This is what Curtis is doing now. He's the financial wizard. So let's rewind. And how did you even get into financial planning? What were you doing anything before financial planning? How did you end up here?
Yeah, I was barely on the team at a Division II college, and I realized the NBA was not looked for 5'11 shooting guards with a mediocre handle.
Hey, at least you were able to accept reality.
Yeah.
You're like, but Spud Webb, you know?
Right. I met him. Like, I went to a party, and he was there. I was like, all right. And I could jump, but I couldn't jump like that, you know? And I had like a 36 inch vertical, but where I was at, everybody could jump like that. So, I transferred from a school in North Carolina and went down there, and it was like Superman going back to Krypton with the red sun. Like, all of a sudden, everybody was as fast as me, could jump as high as me. It's like, okay, I'm what happened here? I used to be Superman. So, but anyway,
I have the opposite end of the spectrum. So, I have like I'm 6'5. And I did like the white boy dunk, right? Where I could dunk. I never forget. I went to I was at a park playing some pickup basketball, and all these guys were looking at me, and they're like, you know, because you walk at a pickup basketball game, and everybody's looking at you thinking, is this guy legit? You know, right. So you have to prove yourself. And I knew one of the guys there, and he put me on the spot. He's like, hey, this guy, my boy Garrett, he can dunk. And I was like, okay. And then he throws me the ball. And I was like, this is going to go one of two ways. I'm either going to land this thing, stick it, or I'm going to get rim stuff, and I'm never going to come back here again.
right.
And it was the most ugly, clunky dunk ever, and it worked. But yeah, being 6'5 definitely helps, but it does not compensate for a 36-inch vertical. So
I mean, you know, I was fast, but I was fearless about, you know, I would not be afraid then of taking somebody to the hole, you know, and
contact,
and dare you to try to stop me. So that was at 17. And, but what happens is somebody showed me but I realized I wasn't doing that. So I was doing like Amway. I was always had little side hustles in school, and somebody showed me a check for $400 and said, this is what I made for hours worth of work. And it was in a financial part-time, like MLM type financial company that specialized in what I call buy term investor difference. So I ended up continuing with that for another 13 years. So I was like a Dave Ramsey on steroids. So I
was it Primerica?
Yes, I was going to put throw them out there like that. But yes,
they're great people.
Yeah, no, they are great people. Yeah. And for your listeners, y'all can't listen to them, okay? Because you know, there's two schools of thought when it comes to finance. And so what happened was, I did that for 12, 13 years, and I was pretty good at it. And I was evangelical about buy term investor difference you know, mutually funded IRAs, Roth IRAs. And I thought the market and mutual funds were the end all be all, right? Then I read a little purple book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad around 2000, right? And I was like, huh, what he's talking about, and it was recommended to me by my upline, but I'm reading it going, we're not talking about the same things here when it comes to finances, right? That's and I really wanted to be a good financial person, more so than a good let me build a sales force person.
Right.
And so I really worked hard at that because it, you know, I paid my first death claim on the insurance with that company at 22. And I realized, okay, this is a big deal. You know what I mean? People do dial this stuff. You need to be accurate in your information. And I just kept digging. And the more I dug, I realized I don't think this is quite right. And then as of getting into what I do today, it's like, because there's two schools of thought. I guess I'll end it this second with this. Is like there's, and this is what I realized. Over like about 10, it wasn't overnight. I mean, it took me a minute to come to figure out this crap out. And because I read it and I was like, all right, I don't know what to do with this. Right. And I had to kind of, took me at least another 8-10 years to kind of codify it into kind of what I teach today. So it was a, not a, it was a long slog. I had to deprogram myself first. That took 3 years. Okay. And like Paul getting, I won't say a cult, but you know, I had to deprogram myself. Right. And so there's two schools of thought. This is what I boil it down to. And this is also a highlight. This is a great book by a person, another Garrett I know, Garrett Gunderson. Right. Okay. He's got a book called Killing Sacred Cows. Right. So there's two schools of thought. There's what he calls personal finance, or what I call the accumulation theory, which is what's taught by typical financial advice, where it teaches you to buy and hold, dollar cost average, get out of debt, buy term investor difference, max out your 401k. And it centers around the S&P index funds. But it's all based on accumulation, hoping the market goes up, compound interest. A lot of people don't even know that mutual funds don't earn compound interest, right? And, you know, they go up, they go down. They appreciate, they depreciate. They don't compound. Anything that compounds is savings vehicles. Like as little... technical stuff that people have wrong, right? And then what? There's the other side of that, which is called the velocity method, right? So if you look at a Shark Tank, when Mr. Warren says, if I give you, you know, $500,000, what's he want to know? How soon am I getting my money back? You know, the Burr method, that's velocity of money in real estate, right? I spoke at last year at the Laundromat Millionaire Conference. And so velocity to these laundromat owners, where I'll teach them some of the stuff I'm talking to you about, was they want bigger, more efficient machines and dryers because they can get people in and out of the mat faster. That's velocity because you can turn over a restaurant, how many times you turn a table over. So velocity, those, that's just an economic principle. It's not a product or anything, right? The second thing they look at is they want, to your point, cash flow. Right. You want to buy assets. If it doesn't cash flow, it's not a good asset. It might be an asset, but it ain't a good asset. If it doesn't produce cash flow, because you can't eat equity. So too many people focus on net worth. I can't. You can't eat equity. OK, that's a lag indicator. I want to buy assets that send me a check unless, you know. So, you know, we're all in one accord there. And they focus on leverage. They're not trying to get out of debt. You debt is money. You have to get there's constructive debt and destructive debt. And so if you're, you know, if you want $100,000 worth of stock. Guess what? You need $100,000. You know what I mean? And so if you want $100,000 worth of real estate, the true answer is it depends how much you need, but let's say on the, you know, just to, for a beginner level, maybe 20%, right? But so that somebody else will loan you 80% to control the asset and you make money when you buy it, to your point. And the tenant pays the loan back. So, you know, don't, we call it, don't hurry to a whooping. You're not trying to pay extra in the mortgage. You're not trying to do all that dumb stuff. That's all a waste of money. And what's the fourth thing? Oh, and then, you know, you look at banks and institutions, they buy like permanent products, you know, banks store their tier one capital in permanent life insurance. And, you know, or they'll buy annuities instead of putting money in 401ks. They buy fixed product. They don't gamble. And see, but here's the thing. So this is kind of what I teach. Those strategies work in personal finance, regular personal finance. And they're safer and they give you more control. And so if you're a real estate investor, you need liquidity, use of control of your capital so that you can buy assets that generate cash flow. And so if you could buy a couple of properties a year for the, let's say you could net $500 a month. and you could buy a couple of properties a year for the next 5 years or 10 years.
Yeah.
To me, that's better than trying to get $2 million in 401k.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. Let me pause real quick because I want to set you up for this, Seth. Seth is a perfect example of what you're talking about. So before Seth got into real estate and we started working together, you were working at a restaurant as mm-hmm. a manager, and you wanted to buy your first piece of real estate for yourself. So walk through your first acquisition, just at a high level, and then how you leveraged that to buy where you are now.
Yeah. So, I knew I wanted to invest, started listening to podcasts and stuff like that. And to your point, I was like, just throwing money in a Roth IRA isn't really going to cut it for me. And so I had a little bit of money in a Roth IRA, but I was like, let's maybe table that for now and let's buy a property. But I wanted to house hack. So I was looking for a duplex and ended up buying a duplex that was in poor condition, had roaches. Long story short, put in more of the sweat equity. I was able to do low money down, 3.5% owner occupant FHA loan. So it's
how
not like
much
I had
did you
money
put down out of your like that. What was the 3.5%?
I came to the closing and because I had asked for some closing costs and stuff like that within mm-hmm. within my deal with the seller. And so I think I only brought $3,500 to closing. Bought a duplex, ranch duplex. Each side's 2-bedroom, 1.5-bath. Now, it was roach infested, so over the next year and a half, I remodeled both sides, and because of that, I bought my property at $116,000, and so over the course of a year and a half, sweat equity, put about $20,000 in it total, did most of the work myself, and on the other end of that, I was able to get it to appraise for $180,000, and so I didn't refinance because interest rates had shot up since then, with mm-hmm. our more of our current market environment. But I went ahead and took out a HELOC on it. And then I used that HELOC to go ahead and buy my next two properties. So I bought another duplex and then a single unit. So I was kind of able to recycle that capital really with hardly any money.
And now what's that second duplex going to cash flow that you were able to leverage off your HELOC?
So the second duplex is going to cash flow. I just leased out the other side actually. So they're both leased out now and I'll be cash flowing about $800 a month off that
just
second
off
duplex.
That one, not including their first one that you bought that you no longer live in.
Yeah. And the first one's going to cash flow a little over $1,000 a month.
And that was in 2 years.
2 years. Yeah.
Right. Now try doing that with where you have to put all the money in, you hope the market goes up.
See,
but
know,
you had
I
to
know.
Learn a little bit, right? So now what I would call that, so in our process, that's what we call step five, the velocity method, right? Well, that's investing to yeah. me, right? And then, so what I would look at somebody like you, I'll say, okay, well, now let's go back through step one, because that's step five. So mm-hmm. it's like investing's last.
Mm-hmm.
But for most people think it's first, right? Mm-hmm. So I teach people to save, right? Part of all your earnings, yours to keep. And 401k is not savings. Let me define savings. Safe, liquid, accessible, mm-hmm. guaranteed, right? Save mm-hmm. what? 15-20% of your gross income, okay? Two, protect, maximum protection. So you got to look at, so when you're doing that, you got to look at all your stuff and go, okay, do I have proper liability coverage on my auto? Do I have replacement costs on my house and my property? Right? Do I have an umbrella policy in case somebody slips and falls, on my property? So now I'm protecting myself from litigation. That's, you got to play. That's what I mean by playing defense, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. What happens if I get hurt and I can't work? That's disability insurance. So I mean, insurance, the purpose of insurance is to indemnify you, which is to make you whole, bring you back to where you were before you're yeah. lost. So it's not sexy, but you can't skip that.
Right. We talk about building wealth a lot, but you got to protect the wealth.
Got to protect mm-hmm. it along protect the way, it. Right? So then there's asset protection, there's wills and trusts, there's entities, LLCs, trusts. All of that falls. And so we talk about that in our process where we go, I don't do it all, but I understand all of it. I don't mm-hmm. do all of it, but investing is a team sport. So we facilitate getting that stuff implemented. I have a 1-page financial plan where we go over each section that we look at your life insurance and, that's principle two. So it's maximum protection. Most people are underinsured. Like if you're 40, you take whatever you make a year, multiply by 25. That's how much life insurance you're supposed to have.
Wow.
Okay. Or not supposed to have. That's how much you can have. That's what the insurance company calls your economic life value. So now you're because you're going to, what's the problem? You're going to live too long. You're going to die too soon. You're going to get sick and live. You're going to get sued. So you have to protect yourself. Right.
Yeah.
And then it's legacy, full replacement of assets at death guarantee. Then it's principle four, liquidity. Okay. Mm-hmm. See, so you listen, if you don't have like 90 days of cash, I don't think you should be investing. Like if you have cash, mm-hmm. I wouldn't put it in a 401k because you don't have access to it. You're locking it up for 30 years,
yep.
right? Because Wall Street changed the language and you think you're saving for retirement. Mm-hmm. Retirement is a flawed concept. Don't get me started with that one, right? You know? I see retirement's an age. I want you to be financially free, which is a capability, right?
Yeah.
Which is passive income, great expenses. But it's hard to reach a target you don't have. That's why I want people to, mm-hmm. what is that number? You know, and so we actually measure that. Based upon your income, we want your assets to match this or at least greater than your expenses. And I put it in front of them every, you know, I have a kind of a coaching accountability program every quarter. Are you growing your, how much did you save? How much are you growing your income? If you have a business, how much are you growing your income every quarter? Because I personally use, is another great book, the 12-week year. And that's kind of like my operating system. Like so you just got to be urgent. See, people aren't urgent enough, you know, and on the day to day, you know, how many, you know, so you look at how many properties you got to look at, how many deals I have to analyze, how many offers I have to make. I think it's to focus on that.
It's easy daily. To get caught sleeping. I mean, you know what I mean? It's all of a sudden, before you know it, three months are gone. Yeah. And you're like, what just happened? I haven't got anything accomplished. And we even see that in your personal disciplines. Within your family, within your working out, within your business, if you don't have a plan, you don't have a goal, and you're not daily almost reviewing that, you're not getting anywhere.
You're not getting. So that's, see, nobody wants to talk about the tactics, right? But it's about becoming, right? So are you, you know, because if you're an entrepreneur, because you're all, see, real estate investors, the other thing, I think we talked about this before. Real estate investors see themselves as investors. Y'all are in business.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right.
You got to run a business. You need to set aside estimated taxes. You need to manage your cash flow. You need to look at your profit and loss. I mean, you're in business, right? You just happen to be, the asset class is real estate, but you got a real estate investing business. And I don't
think
there is
a difference.
There's a difference.
We've worked with owners, you know, it's all too common, right? When you think it's a hobby, you treat it like a hobby. And they'll come in and they're
like,
hobby
money.
Or you lose hobby money.
Right.
We've had people come in and like, I don't know how I got here, but I've got 15 units and 8 of them are vacant. And I've got, you know, $5,000 of back owed rent on this tenant. And it's easy to sit there as a professional and be like, how'd you get here? But it's easy to get there because when you don't monitor it, you can't measure it. When you don't measure it, you can't improve it. So can you give us a case study for somebody that you're working with? You don't have to use, you know, whatever the confidentiality you have to protect there. But I just want to give somebody listening kind of a concrete, like, you know, avatar. This guy was 25.
So let's take this through. Somebody I'm thinking about, I was just talking to. So I have a she's a stud, really. She's really a strong investor. But I looked at her stuff and person had like $3 million of assets. She did multifamily and had at the time, you know, 6 figures of gross cash flow from that.
Wow.
And so, you know, but when I looked at her, so I have this little 1-page plan that goes over, you know, save, protect. So not really saving because nobody values liquidity. Out of that money, like if you make $100,000 a year, I want you saving at least $15,000 of it, so you can add to your liquidity pile. So not enough liquidity. Several LLCs. No. Liability coverage. I said so. You know, LLC is a limited liability company, right?
Right.
So that's not your first line of defense. Your first line of defense is insurance, right? So you let the insurance company go to work for you. So just looking at that, I saw gaps where she was vulnerable.
Yeah.
That needed discussed. Not enough savings. And then, you know, looking at where it's okay, now a few of the properties are not cash flowing like they was, and she's feeling a little pinched.
Yep.
Now she's smart, she'll get out of it. She's a really good investor. But you know, that to me goes to you need to keep, like, I like having, you need to have like a cash machine, something operating to bring in new money. where you, because you can live paycheck to paycheck as an investor, because you're just waiting for the rents to come in, right? And I've done that too. And so I see a lot of that, whereas you know, what are you doing to make money during the week so that, or even like, let's talk about agents, right? So agents mm-hmm. will get, I said, you should be doing something that has a shorter sales cycle, because by the time this commission comes, you are just paying back all the bills you didn't pay for the last 2 months waiting for this big check, right? So you got to manage your cash flow, even it out, you know. So this has happened to me, you know, so I'm in business. So all the business people understand, yeah. you know, what I'm talking about, and yeah. you have to watch your money, watch your pipeline, that kind of stuff. But anyway, so what this person, we just kind of, all right, she was doing well before she met me. But what happened was I just identified some gaps and I gave her a better place to, you know, start saving and a better place to store her liquidity. Mm-hmm. The strategy we call be in the bank. Because what people do is what investors do is the other part. They don't understand opportunity costs, mm-hmm. right? And so you put money in, you take it out. We call that drain the tank. And even if you put it in another deal, what people don't realize is you finance everything you buy. So even when if you pay cash or you put a lot of money in, you're either paying interest, use someone else's money. But when you pay cash, you give up interest you could be earning because equity has no rate of return, right? And so right. a lot of people, so there's a way to kind of leverage your cash, put it in the deal and still have your money making money. So we try to, you know, most people give most of their money away because they don't understand what we call wealth transfers, right? And opportunity costs. And so I kind of bring that concept into mm-hmm. personal finance. And so it's like a lot of times, like I'm one of a successful person, they're doing great and they would do great if they never saw me again. Yeah. Yeah. But you're transferring away $2 to $5 million. Transfer meaning money leaving your asset column and going mm-hmm. to somebody else's, right?
Right.
So if you pay mm-hmm. a tax you didn't have to pay.
Yep. That's good.
You see what I mean? Yeah. That it's not just the, let's say it's $20,000. Well, let's say you're good at getting, let's say you can get 12% return on your cash on cash on your stuff,
and,
right?
And so, let's talk specifics. I think you're alluding to using a life insurance policy as a vehicle to keep that in-house and recycle that. And then the tax side of things, those are too high big.
Level, not trying to go into detail, but yes.
No, that's good though. But I want to connect because Seth and I, you know, really in the last 2 years were exposed to the life insurance policy as a vehicle to fund investments. And then, you know, you mentioned the infinite banking concept, that idea of banking on yourself, paying back your interest. And there's definitely some nuances to that. However, we're actually working with a company right now to get that set in place mm-hmm. so that we can have, you know, in 5 years, it's not a quick thing. It's not mm-hmm. in 1 year, it's not going to feel like we've got that,
right.
you know, access to capital, but it's in for the 3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
And what we're talking about right now is building foundations. Okay. And if you're an investor, a good investor is looking long term, they're looking downrange. And right when you're starting, you're kind of on the hockey stick side of things. But if you can stay on that bottom, it's kind of like bamboo for the first 5 years, grows under the ground to establish that root system. Well, then once it pops above the ground in 6 weeks, it grows 90 feet. And that's kind of that life cycle of an investor is you build the foundations, you put the right systems and vehicles in place, and then things compound and happen very quickly.
It's like building a skyscraper. You have to lay the foundation. Yeah. Right.
You gotta dig down.
And so the foundation, like my first four principles are laying the foundation, mm-hmm. yep. right? The liquidity piece, like I said, look, there's different levels to it, but it's like, you know, the first month, 2 months, you leave in the bank. I told you got to have ATM money. But everything over that, we use a series of, you know, we specialize in whole life, but properly structured dividend paying whole life with a mutual company. So that's specific, right? And you know, I make people read Become Your Own Banker. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because mm-hmm. it's be your own banker. It's not, you know, so I don't sell insurance. I'm going to help you buy it, but it's got to be properly structured for cash. So a lot of people say they're doing it and they have no freaking idea what they're talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
Now I'm getting hype. All right. So, because that's like a pet peeve. Like I'll be on like, not on Clubhouse that much anymore, but like on Instagram and seeing these people, like these people have no idea what they're talking about because they think it's about insurance.
Yep.
Okay. And so the problem is, and if you read Nelson's book, he says, listen, this is not about investing. It's not about Rates of return is about the fact that you finance everything you buy. Who controls the banking function in your life? Because all of your money, all of your rents, all your cash outs are going into somebody's bank.
This message resonates, and it should resonate with people now. If we, the last 5 years, money has come easy.
Yep.
Right? I want to go out and get a loan. I mean, you could fog a breath and get a loan. You know, like bankers are closing in, and it's like, thank you. Fog a mirror and get a loan. Well, that's about to change, right? So having something like this set up to where you could use that to fund investments and not have to call your banker and submit all the financials and the PFS and be subject to where they are with their loan committees and stuff is a huge deal. Or use this as a supplement.
Oh, listen,
to do
I got a client. Her name is Janelle. I call her the Burr Queen. She had, you know, not to put her biz out there, but she puts on Instagram, so I guess I can share. She has enough capital that if she wants to, she can bypass hard money lenders, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and get to six figures with a fax or a phone call, right? Wow. Have 4% money, unstructured payments, interest-only loan.
Yeah.
Okay. And so you have to cap. Well, now people say, oh, I want to do what she's doing. Okay. Well, we've been working together 5 years.
Yep.
Right. So your room wasn't built in a day. She's been capitalizing. I said, you know, it's not a magic money bot. You got a bank can, Adam Smith says, a bank can only loan money if somebody makes a deposit. Right. Mm-hmm. So you have to make some, one of the Nelson's tenets is think long range. Yep. Don't be afraid to capitalize. That means pay a premium. Right. Don't steal the peas, which meaning pay it back. Okay. Mm-hmm. With interest, right? That's what we call EV, economic value added, or being an honest banker. I mean, so if I'll take a loan, let's say I borrow $10,000, you know, even for like a major capital purchase, right? Not even for an investment, but, you know, we're going to on vacation. So I'll put it on a credit card when I get back, or actually before I leave, I'll take a policy loan. So it's back in my account when I get back. And then I get the use of the credit card fueled money for 30 days for free. Right.
Yeah.
And then when I get back, I just pay off the credit card people. And then I make the payments I would have made to Cap One, for example, or whatever, back to Curtis. Right.
Yeah.
With interest. Right. Yeah. So if I can get the money at 4%, then I'm going to pay it back at least 10. I'll just calculate what that is. And then I send it back what they want. And then I send extra money. See, that's the banking part. Right.
Then you run it as a business write off.
Yeah, because it's if it's a business thing, right?
Right. So
not for personal, right?
Even if it's not, I'm just kidding.
Listen, I try to make my life a walking tax deduction. So it's all, that's where you get with your tax person, right? But the thing is like, so it's really being, it's not about the policy per se. It's a process. It's a bank, you know, banking just is another euphemism for storage. Mm-hmm. Where do you store your capital? Where do you store your cash? Where's the best place to store cash? And if you look at the characteristics of the policy, it is superior to any other place. It's not investment. So people look at, oh, what's the rate of return? Can I compare it to real estate? I was talking to a host after we got finished a show I was on last week. It's like, no, it's not an investment. Stop trying to compare. It's where do you store your liquidity?
Yeah. So that
you can, because it's an and product. It's not an or. Like I can store it here. And then so now, because another way to create velocity, y'all got me psyched now. Y'all, another way to create velocity is through simultaneous use.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Utilization. Right. So if you pay a premium, it's insurance, it's death benefit, there's living benefits, there's cash value that's growing tax free or tax favored and ultimately tax free. You can take a little, is earning dividends. Which, because you own part of the insurance company, now you can collateralize the policy to buy other assets. And when people just look at illustrations, they're looking at these numbers and trying to run spreadsheets, and you're missing the whole damn thing because it doesn't count the property that you put 20% down, you borrow from your policy. You got an 80% conventional loan. Well, last time I checked, that's like infinite return because there's none of your money in the deal.
And see, now let me ask you this question. I didn't necessarily know we were going to get to here today, but I'm glad that we did because this is something that kind of operates in the background for a lot of people. So, you know, if you're listening, we're talking about life insurance policies as a way to store your money so that you can velocitize your investments and your capital and how to make it work for you.
Yeah.
So this is a really specific question to that process. If I borrow against my policy, does it show up on a personal financial statement that I submit to a lender?
It can, if you want to.
Okay.
Right. It's invisible to anybody unless you tell them it's there. Right. Yep. So that gives you a certain most
because it's your protection. Money
because it's your money and it's a yep. private contract. So it doesn't right. affect your credit. But now I've had investors say, well, because, oh, you know, I don't want to put in a policy. I'm going to need it. I need proof of funds.
Mm-hmm.
I just have send them a screenshot of your cash value.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And mm-hmm. and that works because, see, if you look at just on a residential mortgage app, a 1003, one of the questions on a 1003 is do you have any cash value in your life insurance?
Yeah.
They know what it asset. Is. They do it. They treat it as reserves. It's an yep. asset class, right? Yep. And so it's still liquid. They know you can get to the money in 3 days.
Yep. Exactly.
So, you know, stop. You know, they think, oh, I don't want to put it here because I need it. Well, okay. You just shouldn't have anything that you need immediate access to with no plan in a day or two. Okay. Right. So sometimes you just the fact that it's going to take 3 or 4 days to get to it allows you to cool off so you don't do something stupid and impulsive. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Right. Because mm-hmm. you got to think about it. You got to have a plan for the it. Like, how are you going to pay it back? Off.
Yeah.
Because you need a coach. Like, you can't just go, I'm going to go, they'll call, you know, insurance company. Hey, I want to be the bank with insurance. You'll get a regular person that just sees this as a gimmick to sell you insurance and it's structured wrong. And yep. I can't tell me those. I get calls where I got to clean up, which I'm good at. But, you know, it's like, okay, that's so I just got to teach it right. So I find myself yeah. being the word police and, you know, yeah. just
that's good.
No, it's not a magic
financial educator.
Right. I'm a financial educator, but that's my job. That's my yeah. gift. That's what I enjoy.
That's great. We're going to switch gears here and we're going to move on to our show segment. We could talk about this for hours. So, I mean, at some point we just got to, no. we got to move on. Garrett and I have been doing a ton of research on this. So it's,
you started
it's a good,
it. I was,
good conversation. we're going to move on to our smaller pockets here. So Curtis, why don't you go ahead and tell us about one of your worst real estate deals or worst kind of maybe financial deals that you were a part of and what went wrong and what did you learn from it?
Let's see. So, initially, we got our family was in the tavern business, right? And so my dad would buy mixed use stuff, but he would, you know, like we'd have the retail shop on the bottom and he wouldn't even think to develop the other floor. He's just like, you know, I'm going to do $800 a month, you know, because he could make, before the economy changed, he could make the retail part of the business generate $5,000 a week.
Yeah, right.
So he didn't want to be bothered. And then I said, oh, we got to develop this. So I helped develop the other piece, but I didn't know anything about management of could they. We let one of our bartenders stay there and move her kids in, and we didn't develop the other. It was a nightmare. You know, they were not
wrong?
Paying. And I just didn't understand management, you know, of the property. So it was like I now realize that, you know, I don't want to do that. And I've got with the stuff we have, I've got, you know, I have a cousin that's like 40 units. So she's like the Michael Jordan, property management. And so I've learned that, okay, let me do what I do.
Yeah.
Okay. Is who, not how. Right. And then let somebody else, do their thing. So just not knowing just anything, you know, just you have it and you know, it's a nightmare because it was like one payment first and last, and then 6 months of nothing.
So it started as a good idea. Excuses. You saw kind of the right. potential of these properties for that your dad owned, mm-hmm. sought to take it to the next level. But the who portion of it, there was some ignorance about property management. And then eventually, though, through some hard lessons, like, did anything ever blow up on you? I mean, having employees rent from you sounds good because you're meeting a need for them so that you can retain them as an employee and work with them. But anytime you kind of layer those things together and intertwine it, it makes for starts to get a potentially messy
family,
situation.
I mean, it's just the human nature part of the business. You just have to separate personal and business. So I learned that.
Yeah.
You know, from the get go.
Did you ever get to the point where you had somebody oversee the property management portion of the commercial buildings you guys owned?
No, we had lost them by then. No, so my father got sick. So we ended up selling them. Mm-hmm. And a big mistake I made was that I could have sold the licenses.
Oh, the liquor licenses?
The liquor license and just kept...
The real estate.
The real estate. And I just was so burnt out. I didn't know how to do it. I didn't know how to do it, you know?
I know this is kind of a painful question. If you would have done that and sold the liquor licenses and kept the real estate, knowing what you know now, what would the outcome have been?
Oh, look, the properties, the neighborhoods, and I knew what was happening. I just didn't know. I didn't have the bandwidth to know what to do, right? Mm-hmm. That's why it's about education. Because if I knew what I knew now, they're doubled in value. The neighborhood's really nice. I would have had three premium apartments. And the other, we had a second one, same thing. And that one was kind of stolen from us, where the person who we had the financing from kind of sent up. I hadn't, you know, we were so burnt out. My family was sick. I wasn't looking at the mail, and or foreclosure kind of stole the liquor license.
Wow.
And then, you know, now, because he knew where I was, because he wanted to do something else. He knew what my office called me in. Then all of a sudden he saw, okay, look, they're asleep at the wheel. And we kind of lost that. And that was a, you know, it was another, and that area is gentrified now. So it's just,
wow,
like 10 years ago, right? So younger, dumber, and just not understanding. And I couldn't see, like, I've seen people do it and turn the bar apart into a daycare, right? Mm-hmm. Or just make it an apartment. And now it's, you know, all apartments, you know, for four apartments. And I just didn't know how to do that.
Sure. Yeah, sure.
No, I'm sorry to say.
No, that's good. I mean, I know we get into the smaller pockets portion. It's always kind of a painful lesson there, you know, but all of us, I mean, listen, everybody's
got. And I had people that did. I just didn't reach out to them.
Yeah.
To let them know the dilemma I was in.
Right. Yeah. And maybe they could have spoken into the situation and said, hey, Curtis, hey, look at this a different way, and we can actually help you get there.
Because a changed viewpoint can change your life. That's why you got to get around, you know, people that, because it would have jumped out to them immediately. Just was so put upon and kinda bummed out and stressed out. Let me get rid of this stuff.
Yeah. There's a proverb in the Bible I read the other day, and it was like, he who is insistent on his own way, like isolates himself. And I know that's not, you know, you weren't trying to insist on your own way, but the what I get from that is when we isolate ourselves, we limit our resources, we limit possibility. And there's, I think, an idea that we have to come up with the solution, you know, or we're just so inundated and overwhelmed. So maybe the lesson there is to reach out to the people in your circle for counsel and insight. But
yeah, I mean, now we got another one. We're starting to build it. I've really been focused on my business, but now I don't manage it. I let somebody that knew how to pick good tenants.
Yeah, right.
And I got the tenant from heaven, right?
Yeah.
You know, going direct deposit.
It's amazing
deposits,
how that works.
You know, fix this stuff, Curtis. You know, I want to buy a new stove with my own money. And, you know, it's just incredible. You know, when COVID happened, it was like, listen, give me your stuff. I started another job because there's other ones slowing down. I want to make sure you get your money. And then, you know, that kind of stuff. Just a conscientious good guy, because and I had another person was going to get me another tenant, and then I was like, no, because it came in with an envelope full of cash. I was like, no. this is, you know, I will never see any other money. I can look at them, because now, you know, I'm from North Philly, I could read people. I was like, no, here's your money back. I'm just,
thank you.
This is not a good thing.
That's funny. Well, hey, on the topic of what we learned, we're going to go into our little nugget. So this is the kind of a summary, so to speak, or an opportunity for you to impart something to our listeners that's tried and true. We're going to ask that it's maybe a little different than what we've talked about so far. What's a principle, could be even personally for yourself, personal development, could be business related, that you lean on daily that drives your business and guides your business?
A couple of things. One of the things that, you know, I heard from the time I was 7 or 8, you'll never make any money work for somebody else. So I never really got that go to school, get a good job talk, you know, because my father was self-employed, my grandfather was self-employed. But in the same vein, he would always say, your store's got to be open, right? Mm. So you had to be consistent. You had to show up for work every day. You had to open the store, because we grew up in retail. And I find that people don't open a store every day, right? They're not doing the profitable activities.
Yeah.
They don't stay add it long enough to give their efforts time to compound, because you're thinking short range. And you know, he'd always tell me it takes 2 to 5 years to build a business. And so I find that people suffer from short-term thinking. They don't give their time, efforts, time to compound, and they don't go to work.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty simple. I mean, it's simple, but it's not easy.
Not easy.
It's hard. I mean, I know a guy right now is a small business owner. I respect the heck out of him. We did a podcast feature for him. He's got a smoothie company here, and that dude grinds, man. And he's there, and he doesn't let worker issues knock him down. He's going to pick it up when someone else maybe isn't reliable, and he's making it happen. And
so you got to be committed to that. Like I told him, like, I don't have the luxury of depression.
Right.
You know what I mean? Too much at stake. I gotta, because my dad said, look, feelings and business have nothing to do with each other. So your store's got to be open. I don't care how you feel.
Yeah.
And, you know, so. And
neither do your customer base. They don't care how you feel.
No, they don't care. So don't tell them. They don't care. You know, half people, half of them don't care. The other people are glad you have problems. Right. So.
That's good. That's funny, man. I told my wife and I had this like aha moment, you know, because sometimes you almost like have this, you're like looking for someone else to come in and save the day. The Calvary's not coming. And you can't have that mindset. You just got to say, listen, it's my responsibility. It's that ownership, that take ownership, extreme ownership.
See, they don't teach, that's the extreme ownership piece, right? See, people, stop looking for somebody. Nobody's coming to save you. Nobody's going to strike an oil well in your backyard. So, right. You know what I mean? So you've got to take control of your life. Stop looking for some president or the economy to change or all that kind of stuff. You have to, you know, Jim Rohn would say, this is one of my favorite sayings. He'd say, the winds of adversity blow on us all. The difference is how you set your sail. So, you know, the other thing I do is I'm big on personal development. So I teach our clients, you got to read 10 to 15 pages a day of stuff so you can learn to set a better sail. He said, we say, don't wish it was easier, wish you were better.
Yes.
So, you know, the three things you work on, what makes money is, this, so now you're just coming at me. Your mindset, your skill set, and your network. That's what you got to work at. So mindset, what you watch, hang around, listen to. Your skill set, what do you know how to do that people will trade you for money? And your network, who do you know? And more importantly, who knows you? And those are things I think that you have, because you're your number one asset, right? So those are things that you have to work on daily if you want to get better, because that's what you, only thing you control is your attitude and your activity.
So
that's what I work on.
And this has been an awesome episode, because it's clear, it comes out very clearly that you practice what you preach, because the stuff's coming out of you is stuff that you sought for yourself at some point to build your business, right? I need this. And now you're at the spot where it's like, I've figured this out. This has worked for me. I'm going to impart this to other people. So I'm going to throw you the ball here. What's been the biggest resource for you in your career, okay, is one. And then how can people follow your success, reach out to you about what we've been talking about today?
I'd say the biggest resource is I'm into personal development. So I, you know, I wish you could, if I had my camera on, you could see my library back here of stuff, and the podcasts and the mentorships and, you know, that kind of stuff. I've always invested in myself, and that is what's grown my revenue. You know, even when I was scared to write the check, I'm to the point now, if I say, all right, I told my wife, I want to do this, where she would look at me side-eyed, or 10 years ago, I was like, all right, well, I guess you should go, because she's seen the growth in my production, my revenue, my confidence. So there's a direct correlation to that, right? And what was the second part?
How can people follow your success? I mean, get in contact with you.
Yeah. So one, if you want more of the madness that is Curtis, go listen to the Practical Wealth Show, right? So you can see, okay, I think I like this guy. I don't know. He sounds a bit crazy. And I would check out our website, Practical Wealth Solutions, which is like a hub where you can go look at our content, go to our YouTube channel, and kind of, we try to put a lot of educational content out, because my philosophy is that, you know, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear.
Yep.
And so if you watch the stuff, then also there is something on our page that says apply to work with Curtis, and you can actually make an appointment. We have a complimentary strategy session. I have a link on the website that says Be the Bank, and we'll send you, we have like a free webinar to give you it's an introduction. Nelson used to teach a two-day 10-hour workshop on this stuff. So I'm at best giving you a preamble, right? And but at least you'll have a pretty good economic. Why would you do this? Yeah. Why would you use insurance? Mm-hmm. Where does it fit?
Yeah, in my
because
strategy.
The wealth tool is the real estate. It's, mm-hmm. This is just a place to store your liquidity. So a lot of people get that stuff confused. And so I'm an educator. So I don't try to talk people into stuff. I just want you to learn, and then we'll, you know, guide you through, get your finances together. Yeah. And because you see on my background, your economic situation is a matter of choice, not chance. So you have to choose to be rich. You have to mm-hmm. choose to take control of your life. You got to choose to set a better sail. And what I try to do through our shows, through, you know, our mentorship and our, you know, we have a newsletter called the Cashflow Nair. So the goal of our cause to get you to what we call the glorious position of FU, which is passive income twice your expenses. And so I'm big on education, right? I'm taking control. You're like getting tougher, right? You know,
yes.
And that kind of stuff. So in my world, Curtis is going to coach you. I want to make you stronger. I want you to be in control. I want you to focus on the main thing.
Well, dude, you look like a coach. I mean, you got me hyped and ready to go. So, hey, man, those links will be in our show notes. Please, please, if you enjoyed today's episode, go check out his website and poke around his YouTube channel and for more resources what we've been talking about.
I have a gift, too. I got to fix it and send it to you, but it's a one-page website for your listeners where I have a report on it called the Five Principles of Personal Finance. So it's kind of based on our process. So I'll send you that so you can give it out and make an opt-in and get the free report.
Awesome, man. Awesome. Hey, it's been a pleasure today. Thank you so much for joining our show.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Awesome, man. As always, excited that you joined us on another episode of the Reinvest Podcast. If this episode added to your tool belt or left you feeling inspired, go ahead and share it with a friend. Stay tuned every Tuesday for new episodes. And if you want to get in touch with us, go to our LinkedIn or Facebook profiles and shoot us a message. Move farther, reach higher, and grow deeper. See you next time.